This is BTV, Business Television. Discover companies to invest in.
This week, from tomatoes to cannabis, gold production in Colombia, novel technology for lithium, bringing silver production to the Yukon, and finding energy from wastewater. Hello, I'm Taylor Tone.
And I'm Jessica Kasierczak. Welcome to BTV Business Television.
On this episode, we take a look at a wide variety of investment opportunities, including mining, tech, and farming.
Like Village Farms International, a very successful large-scale greenhouse grower. It performed so well last year that it's been recognized as a 2018 OTCQX Best 50 company.
In fact, it ranked number 4 on this prestigious list. Jason Palterwich from the OTC Markets Group explains how companies qualify.
The OTCQX Best 50 has a number of criteria that we use in our selection. First and foremost, we use total return and average dollar volume growth as the basis. They cannot be penny stocks. Their closing price as of December 31st, 2017 has to have been above 25 cents. And they have to have traded at least $500,000 in total dollar volume for the year.
And here's how companies benefit from being listed on the OTC.
Access to a broader investor base. So you're gaining access to US investors south of the border that for whatever reason don't want to trade north of the border or can't. So they can trade in their US accounts in US dollars. The other advantage would be an actual increase in their global liquidity.
Village Farms International is one of the largest and longest operating growers of greenhouse produce in North America and the only publicly traded greenhouse produce company in Canada. But the big story is that it's adding a new cash crop to its existing product line of fruits and vegetables, cannabis. We caught up with Village Farms president and CEO in one of his greenhouses in Delta, BC, to talk about his company's move into cannabis.
About three decades ago, we saw a clear opportunity using very high-end agricultural technology for high-value crops that can be grown or need to be grown to meet a market demand on a year-round basis. And over those 30 years, we've become one of the largest producers of produce, specifically tomatoes, peppers, cukes, in North America. We have almost 6 million square feet of high-tech production in Texas, here 4 million square feet, Ontario another 3 million, so on and so forth. When the Canadian government decided to legalize medicinal marijuana, that's when we really started doing our homework and eventually made a decision to move into the space.
This bold move by Village Farms was made possible through a recent joint venture with Emerald Health Therapeutics, a licensed medical cannabis producer also based in BC. Together, they each own 50% of Pure Sun Farms Corporation, a vertically integrated company that aims to be one of the most reliable growers and suppliers of quality cannabis products across Canada and internationally. With their combined infrastructure and expertise, it's a company well positioned to enter the much anticipated recreational marijuana market.
Currently, we're converting 10% of the assets that Village Farms International owns. That 1.1 million square feet conversion of a standalone greenhouse here adjacent to this property represents 10% of the assets we own in Texas and here in British Columbia. And that conversion, once it's fully operational, will generate close to $100 million more than all of Village Farm generates after 29 years in business. You know, I look at our business as we are greenhouse growers in controlled environments, regardless of if it's peppers, tomatoes, or cannabis. And our underlying business of doing that is the same. We're just changing a certain crop, and we've done that many times. In the 9 months since we launched this joint venture, we're on the verge within a year of possibly being the largest cannabis producer in Canada, if not the world. Time will tell, but I think that Pure Sun Farms will certainly be in the top five in terms of capacity, in terms of what's produced in the next 2 years.
And as Michael DiGilio explains, that confidence comes from experience in the science and business of agriculture.
You know, this is a fixed cost business. You don't give a plant more fertilizer and have more yield. But if you use technology, making a better environment, more output of the yields you grow, that all helps to lower your cost, and we do that every day.
Ultimately, the fact that Pure Sunfarms is able to operate as a low-cost producer bodes well for them in a market that is yet to be tested.
With revenues of $200 million as the underlying business, you know, we feel we're in a very de-risked situation compared to our competitors. So I think, you know, we're prepared to be a strong competitor to those other companies going forward. I think our timing's perfect as we're starting to plant out crops over the next few months. This is farming, and you know, we're farmers, and it's been a long battle in 30 years to get it right.
Village Farms recently closed a $10 million financing to be used mainly to bring their cannabis division into full-scale commercial production. You can find Village Farms listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange. The symbol there is VFF. And in the U.S., their symbol is VFFIF.
Coming up next, a company that believes it's going to more than triple its annual gold production of 60,000 ounces.
We probably will achieve somewhere in the 200,000 ounces this year.
And later, we turn our attention to silver and a mine revival in the Yukon.
It is, without doubt, one of the highest grade silver districts in the world.
We'll be right back. You're watching BTV.
Welcome back to BTV. To set the scene for our next feature, we spoke with Frank Holmes, CEO of U.S. Global Investors. Here's his big picture view on investing in gold.
We do believe that the supply from mines is shrinking, and you have to look for those gold stocks which are stable and have the potential to grow. But really important for all these investors is there's no silly things done by management that destroys the value metrics per share.
Gran Colombia is the largest underground producer of silver and gold in Colombia. It has several mines in production, and ongoing exploration gives blue sky potential to its Segovia operations. Segovia has been expanding and modernizing over the last 5 years. But since we last featured the company on BTV, significant debt restructuring has reawakened investor interest in Gran Colombia. Here's what the executive chairman has to say.
We believe that the market has reacted very positive to the three things that we've done. Number one, the reduction of the debt. Number two, the stabilizing of the cost and the improving of the ounces. And number three, the restructuring of the debt. Not only the investors that have been loyal to us, but now institutional investors are starting to pay attention to this company.
All of this has generated more cash to invest in its main focus, Segovia, which is the most prolific of Gran Colombia's properties. Out of 23 different known vein systems, only three are being mined, which alone accounts for 80% of their current gold production. At present, three veins are in production, with the potential for more in the future.
We believe it's got one of the richest vein systems in Colombia, if not in Latin America. We are mining some incredible widths, some incredible grades. So our next effort is to start stepping out into exploration in areas that haven't been developed in the past.
Also important to note is the work that has been done to upgrade and modernize the Segovia mine over the last 5 years, which has included significant health and safety improvements. The efforts are paying off in more ways than one.
The last time we had renovations was about 80 years ago. The first effort that we did was to change the culture of the workers. It's been a complete success, which has stabilized our community relations in the country. The next step that we took started modernizing the plant. Now you have an absolute modern, state-of-the-art, environmentally stable and friendly environment that helps also with the workers. We have developed a much more stable underground exploration and exploitation area by having better tunnels, better ventilation, the first access to a safety area that we developed for our miners in case of accidents, the only one existing in Colombia right now.
A second important achievement has been the increase in production in Segovia over the past 2 years, which has turned into a successful, low-cost and profitable operation.
We've had two successful quarters of 50,000 ounces per quarter production. We probably will achieve somewhere in the 200,000 ounces this year.
And a third important bit of news is the recent restructuring of Gran Colombia's debt position, which provides investors with a clearer picture of the company's balance sheet. Financier Frank Holmes also agrees that Gran Colombia is one to watch.
This is a company that's now gone from negative cash to a surplus of almost $20 million on the balance sheet. They are increasing their production dramatically, resolved any working issues they've had with people. They've put more money into safety. Their board of directors have very competent people, well-known in Toronto from the mining sector. So I think that the Gran Colombia is in a great position for growth in Colombia.
When it comes to how he wants his company perceived, this CEO doesn't hesitate to offer his take on things.
We have now excess cash that we're going to be dedicating into exploration. We can put our efforts to open up new areas and new fronts. So this company has a growth profile like no other company has right now.
Investors seem to be catching on to this company's story. Long considered by management to be undervalued relative to its peers, the share price recently hit a new 52-week high. You can check out all the details at their website. They're at grancolombiagold.com.
Next up, Entertopia, with a new technology you need to know about.
The key focus commodity-wise is lithium. Last year was the first year that we surpassed 1 million electric vehicles in the world, and it's anticipated by 2040 there'll be 50 million electric vehicles being built every year. Our key project is in Clayton Valley, Nevada, and we're using at-surface rock, and we're turning that into a synthetic brine by adding water and adding different chemicals to change the pH. So it reduces impurities and it creates a very pure lithium brine. And from what we've seen, the purest lithium brine in the industry today. The remainder of the year is our ongoing bench testing with our technology partner, Genesis Water Technologies, to come up with battery grade lithium. Ultimately, we're working on perfecting the technology, upgrading the property in Clayton Valley so we could produce from Clayton Valley, and then licensing the technology to other brine producers in the world as we have the licensing rights for Argentina, Bolivia, Chile, and the United States. The EV industry is one of the fastest growing sectors in our world today. Just China alone will put a factor of 10 to 20 times the amount of lithium that's being consumed today within the next 12 years.
After the break, find out which copper producer this analyst has taken a shine to.
For anyone that's bullish on the outlook for copper, we tend to steer them towards leveraged plays.
Coming up later, putting silver in the Yukon back on the map.
We've put close to 80, 90 million ounces of silver on the books, indicated and inferred.
We'll be right back. You're watching BTV.
Welcome back to BTV. Copper Mountain Mining has recently completed the acquisition of the Altona Mining Company in Australia, an important milestone in the evolution of the company. With operations now on two continents, we asked Cormark Securities base metals analyst Stefan Ioano about the significance of this deal.
Copper Mountain is obviously one of the first established producers to make a very significant growth step since copper price has turned. I think, you know, people are anticipating M&A activity in the space in general, and you could argue Copper Mountain's been a first mover with respect to that.
Copper Mountain Mining's flagship mine in British Columbia is about a three-hour drive from the port of Vancouver. They produce about 80 million pounds of copper per year.
We are attracted to the project in that it's a relatively low-grade operation, big open pit, and because of that low grade, it translates into a very leveraged profile in terms of production and cash flow. So what that means is, you know, small changes in the copper price on a percentage basis translate into meaningful changes with regards to cash flow per share, which is a key metric a lot of investors and analysts look to when valuing companies like Copper Mountain.
Analysts now looking at Copper Mountain have to add the company's Australian acquisition into the equation. For about $70 million Australian dollars, Copper Mountain now owns 100% of the Eva Copper project in Queensland.
They're getting a project that on paper has a NAV of about $460 million Australian. So quite lucrative. The thing to me that's very interesting, aside from location globally, it's very, very complementary to the existing Copper Mountain mine. Again, an open pit producing about 80 to 85 million pounds of copper a year at a similar cash cost profile, call it somewhere between $1.65 and $1.85 per pound. For anyone that's bullish on the outlook for copper, we tend to you know, steer them towards leveraged plays, and Copper Mountain is one of the most leveraged plays out there.
The target is for the Eva Copper project to begin production by about 2020. And moving the company forward will be its new president and CEO, Gil Clausen. Everybody loves a comeback story. This one is set in the mining-friendly jurisdiction of Canada's Yukon, where Alexco Resources is moving the Keno Hill Silver District back toward production. The company acquired the 233 square kilometer area from the Canadian government in 2006. This CEO is confident it's time to put Yukon Silver back on the map.
Keno Hill was the second largest silver producer in Canada between 1913 and 1988. It produced a little more than 200 million ounces of silver, but an average grade of, in today's parlance, of about 1,200 to 1,400 grams per ton silver. So it is, without doubt, one of the highest grade silver districts in the world.
The rebirth of silver mining at Keno Hill began in 2011. But even when operations of the Bella Keno mine were suspended in 2013, Scarsdale Equities mining analyst Mike Niehauser, who has been following the company since 2008, knew it was just a matter of time until the curtain was bound to rise on Alexco's next act.
I think Alexco has one of the best management teams in the industry. They're very well-rounded, and it starts with Clint Nauman, who earlier in his career came in to solve some environmentals at Greens Creek in Alaska. And in so doing, he found a way to work with regulators and found a way to solve complex environmental problems, build a business around that, Alexco Environmental Services. And that led to him winning a bid, I think, among 16 different companies for the Keno Hill Silver District, which I think was acquired for less than $1 million.
We're in the environmental business because we see it as part and parcel of the, you know, of the mining business. I know it's difficult for some people to get their head around the fact that we're miners on one hand, and on the other hand, we are cleaning up or remediating brownfield sites. We see the two as complementary businesses, actually, and certainly we see the environmental business strategically as leading us to opportunities like Keno Hill.
That opportunity, according to Clint Newman, is contained in about 1 million tons of material from 3 or 4 different deposits in the district, just waiting to be mined.
We've done a significant amount of exploration. We've put close to 80, 90 million ounces of silver on the books, indicated and inferred. We're currently in development, heading towards production. We have an 8-year plan in front of us. It'll be producing about 3.5 million ounces of silver a year, $27 million in capital, internal rate of return of more than 70%. Alexco is a good place to be if you believe that the future in silver is bright. And in addition to that, Alexco is one of the few primary silver producers left in the world, and Alexco will be Canada's only primary silver producer.
There's no doubt the silver is there, but what makes Alexco the right team to mine it?
Alexco is making this transition from explorer-developer to developer-producer. And admittedly, that's a road that's fraught with exposure and risk. But you know, at Alexco, we have a group of people who have been through this transition before. So I am very confident, given the talent and ability of the people that we have around us, that we'll be successful in making that transition.
Of course, when the mines in Keno Hill Silver District are once again back in business, Alexco will have no control over what's happening in the silver market. But Clint Newman understands what he has to do.
The one thing I can control is costs, and that's where we're focused, and just making sure that our margins are going to be preserved no matter what that silver market is doing.
In addition to their near-term production, Alexco is continuing exploration. The company is confident there's still much more silver to be found in Yukon's Keno Hill Silver District.
When we come back, how a tech company is able to recover energy from wastewater. A lot of energy.
In the US and Canada, for instance, that's a total of about $40 billion a year that can be recovered.
We'll be right back. You're watching BTV.
Welcome back to BTV. Here's what this mining analyst has to say about this gold exploration company, Cardinal Resources.
Cardinal Resources. They're in Ghana, and they've got about, I think, a little better than 6 million ounces already defined right now on their resources. The grade isn't super high grade, but it's your regular West African grade. Nothing that's going to be a negative. I think just the size of the deposit is what's going to get people's attention. For the guys at Cardinal, we're going to keep pushing ahead, and someone, I think, is going to find this deposit of interest.
Next. Shark Energy Systems mine a resource that's literally going down the drain.
The main focus of Shark is to recover the billions of dollars a year that is put down the drain in the form of warm wastewater. So from showers, dishwashers, laundry, all that energy from every house in the world ends up going down the drain system. In the US and Canada, for instance, that's a total of about $40 billion a year that can be recovered. And with that, the associated carbon savings. Shark Energy has really a product for every part of the market. We have a large industrial product called a Shark Unit. We have a single building product called a Piranha, and we're just coming out with a household version. Everything we do reduces carbon. We offset natural gas on all of our installations, so we're one of the leading technologies in the world on carbon reduction. We have now opened on three continents. We have offices in North America, Australia, and the UK. We have installations in three continents. One very exciting project we did recently was convert an entire university in Scotland from natural gas to sewage heat recovery. And the carbon reduction associated with that has won that university acclaim around the world for the system. In the new world order here, reducing carbon, we're going to be a major player, but we can be a very, very reliable, responsible company in the meantime.
I hope we showed you today there's certainly no shortage of opportunities to invest in.
But as always, it still boils down to risk versus reward.
Thanks for joining us today. For BTV, I'm Taylor Tone.
And I'm Jessica Kachachak.
Until next time, may your portfolio prosper.
This is BTV, Business Television. Discover companies to invest in.
Coming up this week, exploration and production, zinc, copper, oil and gas, and plenty of gold. Mining companies on the move.
Hello, I'm Taylor Tone.
And I'm Jessica Kachachak. Welcome to the season finale of our 20th season at BTV Business Television.
Be sure to stay tuned in until the very end, where we flash back to where it all began 20 years ago.
I, for one, am excited to see Taylor's hair.
Also on this episode, we look at several mining companies.
Some are in production and others are very close.
But one thing is certain, new exploration must be encouraged and financed. Nothing comes out of the ground without years of development and exploration up front.
No exploration, no production.
And for many base metals, a constant and reliable supply has global implications, far beyond our first world needs. Analyst Rick Rule explains.
Essential for the future of mankind, essential for an increasing standard of living among the 2 billion people in the world who are the world's poorest. If you travel in frontier to emerging markets as much as I do, you'll see that in the last 30 years, mercifully, the poorest 2 billion people in the world have become progressively less poor. And as the standard of living that you and I enjoy goes to the rest of the world, their demand for electricity increases, which means their demand for copper increases. So looking 4 years out, 5 years out, 6 years out, I see life getting better and better and better for most of mankind, which means we use more and more and more copper.
The name has changed. Canadian Zinc Corporation is now NorZinc. And the company has a new president and CEO, longtime mining veteran Don McDonald. He now leads a company with a project that's had a long on-again, off-again history, the Prairie Creek Mine in the Northwest Territories. So is the timing right to open a zinc mine? Stephanie Wano looks at zinc from a global perspective.
What we've seen over the last few years is a number of large zinc mines shut down. They've just run their course and depleted reserves. And when you add them all up, it's around 10 to 15% of world supply has come off. And so what that's really shaping up for now is an emerging supply deficit. And inventories are already at critical levels. They continue to drop every day. And I think as we move through the tail end of this year and into 2019, we're really going to see that crunch start to take effect. And so the future for the zinc prices is pretty bright.
The numbers appear to be in NorZinc's favor.
NorZinc is, with its Prairie Creek mine, is one of the highest grade undeveloped zinc lead deposits in the world. It has a 23% zinc equivalent to 8 million tons. It has a life of 15 years with its reserves and potential of doubling that based upon its resources. It has substantial infrastructure in place, over 150 million US of infrastructure in place, and a relatively low capital development cost of about 220 million US.
A feasibility study came out in September of 2017, and since then, the project has continued to advance.
Prairie Creek Mine has already got the operating permits. It already has passed through the environmental assessment process. When right now in the stage where we're looking at the final permit writing with the regulators. The plan would be to have our updated feasibility study done and to have our financing done in the latter part of next year and a full operation in 2022.
The mine construction alone will have considerable economic impact on the region, but that's just the beginning.
We're going to be spending over $200 million US a year when we're in operation. It is a very substantial amount for the local community. And we have not only these employment benefits, but we also have payments that will go to the indigenous groups, as well as, of course, tax revenues to the territories and to the federal government.
But what about environmental impact? Prairie Creek Mine is actually surrounded by Nahanni National Park Reserve. NorZinc is working within the guidelines negotiated with Parks Canada and the nearby Indigenous groups. Their traditional territory lies just outside the park.
We have a very low environmental impact with regards to the project. It has a very small footprint and we use 100% backfill. So we basically do not have a tailings dam, which is really good for the environmental side of the project and will enable and facilitate the ability to expand the project's throughput without necessarily having to worry about extra environmental effects related to the on-site operations.
McDonald has been in the mining business long enough to know the right time for a big investment.
It's sometimes a struggle to go through the development and financing of projects. That is really a challenge which excites me. And I'm also excited to be able to put together a team that will develop the mine and ultimately the new team that will operate the mine. And yes, it takes a few years, but every year is different. Every year has its challenges. But at the end of the years, what you see is a mine that's put back money into the community.
and hopefully a mine that will benefit shareholders as well. Don McDonald believes it will, based on what it will cost to get the zinc out of the ground.
The cash cost is below 50 cents per pound US dollars. We have a cash price of zinc right now, which is just north of $1.20 a pound. So there's a substantial margin on the operating costs of this mine.
With NorZinc's environmental assessment complete, operating permits in hand, and the permit writing for the access road underway, it looks like the Prairie Creek Mine is finally turning the page on its past.
Coming up next, two thumbs up for an acquisition in Australia.
It's a bit of a rarity to see an asset like this that comes into the company that's ready to be built right away.
And later, a gold mine in a golden jurisdiction.
I couldn't see more good things about working in Quebec.
We'll be right back. You're watching BTV.
Welcome back to BTV. In today's modern economy, base metals such as nickel, zinc, and copper are in high demand. The last few years have been difficult for the base metals market, but analyst Pierre Vaillancourt shares his thoughts on the matter, along with how Copper Mountain Mining, with one copper mine in production in BC, is leading the charge.
We've seen a gradual deterioration in the metals prices, so margins have been affected. A number of these stocks have rebounded off the bottom since the end of October, I think possibly in anticipation of an accommodation by China and the US with their trade dispute. We're still looking at a deficit by the second half of 2019 into 2020 for copper. And we also are optimistic for the long-term outlook on a lot of these metals, again, particularly with respect to copper.
With their newly acquired property in Australia, showcasing a very robust production profile, Copper Mountain could increase their annual production by 90 million pounds of copper.
You have to go with companies where you have faith in operations and management and their ability to deliver on their targets. What Copper Mountain has to offer is upside and optionality with its Australian assets. They've delivered a feasibility study on that, which has the potential to double production from where it is now. A single asset company like Copper Mountain benefits quite a lot from the diversification that a second mine can bring on.
And the timing couldn't be better. With the Eva Copper project fully permitted and what it has to offer, it could be in production by 2021.
Is a pretty attractive upside for Copper Mountain in a time in which it's genuinely difficult to not only discover new deposits, but put them into production. Typically, the permitting timetable can be, 18 to 20 years. So it's a bit of a rarity to see an asset like this that comes into the company that's ready to be built right away. It lines up well for fundamentals in copper, particularly coming from the supply side. I think ultimately there will be a reversion back to more attractive levels for these stocks to reflect the lack of supply coming from the mining companies.
Pierre Vaillancourt believes investors will see base metal gains in the long term, and Copper Mountain Mining Corporation will be there to meet the demand.
Here's a junior oil and gas company that's not afraid of the big boys down in Texas.
Permex Petroleum is a uniquely positioned junior oil and gas company with assets and operations across the Permian Basin of West Texas and the Delaware Subbasin of Southeast New Mexico. Permex was in a hawkish position during this most recent down cycle. We acquired assets at a discount, typically 20 cents, 30 cents on the dollar, creating immediate shareholder value. Second would be the actual geography and the geology. We're located in the Permian Basin with the large caps. This area was the only area in 2014, 15, and 16 that flourished. geology, the formations we're targeting and we have under our fields are the same geological formations that all the large caps target, the Bone Springs, Wolf Camps, and the San Andreas. The third thing, every entrepreneur thinks they have a nimble structure. We have 35 million shares outstanding, no debt, and 11% management ownership, making it extremely tightly held. Since we've been public, we've achieved every single milestone. From a land standpoint, we stated that we want to grow our land scale. We have done so. We went from 5,200 to 6,500 net acres. From a reserve standpoint, we've increased our reserves from 115 million USD to 150 million USD. From our production standpoint, we have doubled our production over the past while. We're actually targeting horizontal drilling programs, which assist in the cash flow of the company significantly, and we can expect that to come into play over the next couple months. Timing we entered the market was the best time. I always say, don't let a good disaster go to waste. We took advantage of a disaster.
After the break, a mining company in Mexico having success with less.
We have 300 people employed at the mine. That's less than half of the previous operator.
And coming up later, so what top stories were on BTV's radar in 1998?
It's a coffee company. We retail coffee products.
More books have been written about this one management subject than any other, goal setting.
We'll be right back. You're watching BTV.
Welcome back to BTV. When it comes to investing in the mining sector, how do you choose between exploration companies and established producers? This mining analyst has some advice that might help you develop an appropriate strategy.
Investment strategy really comes down to your risk tolerance. Some of the best returns can be made on early stage exploration companies. Essentially almost like buying a lottery ticket. Returns can be very high, but the chance for failure is also high. Conversely, established producers that have steady cash flow profiles, long mine lives that are well defined ahead of them, they can generate meaningful returns over a long period, but they may not be subject to the windfalls that an exploration company may have.
Canadian-based Telsa Mining has one operating mine in Mexico and now has funding in place to complete construction of their second mine, which already has started production. This undervalued gem should not be overlooked.
Telsa is a mining company. We're focused on polymetallic deposits, but primarily moving towards precious metals. Both our projects are in Mexico. One, Campo Morado, is in Guerrero. The second, Tabueto, is in northwestern Durango. Campo Morado, we just announced commercial production and we're producing around 2,000 tons a day, ramping up towards 2,500 tons per day. We have 300 people employed at the mine. That's less than half of the previous operator. Tabueto in construction now, and we anticipate full production 2019, declaring commercial production maybe second quarter of 2019. At Tabueto, we're in a construction phase. It's probably 200 or 300 people coming up there very quickly. We're planning on doing a lot of exploration to increase the size of the production at both projects, and we have a really aggressive plan to acquire new projects because Antonio Berlanga, our CEO, is very well connected in Mexico and has projects already targeted. Telsa's management team is very strong Mexican-oriented. They're a very hands-on group of built and operated mines in Mexico for many years and are really pushing Telsa forward with their expertise.
As 2018 winds down, Victoria Gold continues construction at the Eagle Gold Project. Everything points to the first ounce of gold being poured in the fourth quarter next year, the first of an estimated 200,000 ounces per year for the next 10 plus years. With 440 women and men on site, construction is progressing well, on schedule and on budget. The focus right now is on completing concrete work and erecting steel to enclose the buildings so that crews can focus on electrical and mechanical interior work during the coldest winter months. Whether you think Victoria Gold is an attractive takeover target or a standalone scenario, the company has certainly walked the walk. Eagle Gold is set to be a high-quality, low-cost operation that is on target to be the largest gold mine in Yukon history. When we come back, a mining executive tells it like it is.
There's no other company like Bonterra out there right now.
We'll be right back. You're watching BTV.
Welcome back to BTV. Bonterra Resources is a gold exploration story in northern Quebec that keeps on growing. With their recent acquisition of Metnor Resources, Bonterra now controls three advanced high-grade gold deposits and the only permitted gold mill in the Urban Barrie camp. We spoke to Bonterra's CEO and president, Nav Dhaliwal, to talk about the company's plans.
Our primary focus here is that we've combined the companies, become the first movers in this camp to essentially get out there and expose the deposits for what they are by putting the drill bits to work. We really want to get our hands around how big these deposits are before we go back into the production scenario. I would say that there's no other company like Bonterra out there right now with the cost savings and the style of deposits that we've now put together in one of the most prolific camps in Quebec, let alone in Canada.
At the same time the resource is being better defined, infrastructure needs are being evaluated. There is an existing network of roads and a permitted mill with power. But now, with multiple deposits, the mill capacity needs to be increased.
The upgrades to the mill are we're going to expand the footprint of it. We're going to add a series of ball mills. We're going to add some more settling ponds. We're going to take it from the 1,200 tons per day and expand it to 2,400 tons a day.
So how is fast tracking part of the equation?
The bottom line with us doing the fast tracking is that we're taking a current infrastructure of the mill and the workings that it has to move the Mulroy deposit that we're now exploring, getting that moving and rounding out the resource there. Moving to the Barrie deposit that has the decline in it, we just want to define what we're doing there by more exploration. And again, we've started the permitting process on the Gladiator project this fall so we can get a decline and a bulk sample out next spring.
Dhaliwal is quick to point out that one of the factors responsible for moving everything forward is the favorable location of the project.
With the tax credits that residents of Quebec get, the proactiveness of the government helping with their Plan Nord, again, I couldn't see more good things about working in Quebec.
Which is not to say it's going to be easy.
If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. The challenges that a junior exploration company is going to face is the expectations. What we've tried to do is manage people's expectations because they're all over the board. How we've always done that is giving out timelines of what we set as milestones for ourselves and hitting those. And in mining, something's always going to go wrong. But when you have a deposit such as Gladiator that is now starting to become more and more predictable, I think the job's getting easier.
Dhaliwal is also convinced that with the Metnor acquisition, it should also be easier for investors to recognize the value of Bonterra.
If you take a combined company now of having a market cap of $200 million, our peers with similar deposits or similar pathways are double our value right now. So there's a lot of upside for our investors. These are very exciting times for us.
And perhaps high time for attention to be paid to exploration companies like Bonterra, Rick Rule of Sprott Holdings explains.
Exploration is being completely ignored by the investment community at the same time that it's increasingly a focus of the mining community. In fact, about 50% of the equity financings for juniors, high-quality juniors, that took place in Canada last year didn't come from investors. They came from mining companies, which says that the mining companies see something that the investors don't see.
Soon, we should have a better idea of just how big a gold project Bonterra may become. Look for an updated mineral resource estimate within the next few months. Rick Rule offers his opinion on what's ahead for precious metal stocks.
I think the precious metal stocks will do well in the next 12 to 18 months. First of all, because they're unloved, which means that they're cheap.
But sectors move because they outperform expectations. And the expectations in the precious metals sector are so low that the industry can't help but exceed expectations, which are, of course, non-existent.
Plus, Rick has some observations on other sectors in the mining industry.
We have just seen the agricultural minerals, potash and phosphate, move into an uptrend, I think. We have seen the very beginnings of an uptrend in uranium, and we've seen the beginnings of an uptrend in platinum. All of those materials are off investors' radar. They're all unloved, they're all cheap, and it would appear that they're in the beginnings of uptrends, and nobody has noticed this yet.
Before we wrap up, let's take a quick journey back in time. Here's a peek at BTV's first season 20 years ago. Today we're going to visit a company called Blends Coffee, a unique franchise that offers its franchisees a full solutions business.
It's a coffee company. We retail coffee products.
We have been able to do things that a lot of people have not been able to do.
More books have been written about this one management subject than any other, goal setting.
Today we're going to visit a company who's had tremendous growth recently.
Save sending 40 million sheets of paper out to credit unions every year. That's a lot of trees.
Today we're going to look at the largest Canadian-owned freight forwarders, Locker Evers International.
We own our own terminal, we have our own trucking fleet.
Landfills across Canada are reaching their maximum capacity.
Consumers put all their wet material in one bag, all their dry material in another. The material that we receive in the back door of this plant is diverted from landfill.
There's only three suppliers in the world, and we have a feature that no one else can match.
Luxel Technologies introduces the world's first truly sunlight legible thin film electroluminescent display.
Our peel on apple, and it'll turn brown in about 15 minutes.
We extend the shelf life on average about 30 days.
It's all natural, I think, is a real bonus for the consumer of today's society.
Thanks for watching this week's edition of Business Television, the show that profiles exciting companies and entrepreneurs. Wow, Taylor, what an amazing journey it's been.
It sure has, Jessica. And for 20 years, mining has clearly been a sector that shouldn't be ignored.
And though they're subject to the forces of supply and demand, the commodities themselves never really go out of fashion.
But it's quite amazing how long it can actually take for a project to go into production.
Definitely an industry for patient people. Thanks for joining us today. For BTV, I'm Jessica Kasterchak.
And I'm Taylor Tone. Until next time, may your portfolio prosper.